You're listening to B2B Tech Talk with Ingram Micro, a place to learn about how to grow your business and stay ahead of technological advances before they become mainstream. This episode is sponsored by Ingram Micro's Xvantage, the next level way to transform your business's potential and reshape how customers see you through advanced transactional data. Let's get into it.
Welcome to B2B Tech Talk with Ingram Micro. I'm your host, Shelby Skirhawk, and our guest today are three brilliant members from the Cisco cybersecurity team. Gauri Khanna is a public sector select cloud security specialist. Kiana Brown, a public sector cybersecurity solutions engineer. And Lundy Shea, cybersecurity sales specialist. Gauri, Kiana, and Lundy, welcome.
Thank you for having us, Shelby. We're very excited to be here.
Absolutely. So today we are talking about Zero Trust with the cybersecurity team there at Cisco. But first, Gauri, can you kind of set the stage for us? I mean, what is Zero Trust?
Yes. So Zero Trust is a framework and an architecture. It doesn't really matter which one you prefer to call it, but I'm going to say architecture. And this architecture enforces the principle that every user device requesting access to your network is malicious until proven otherwise. So a simpler way to put this is that you grant specified and differentiated access to every single user every time they attempt to connect.
So Kiana, when we say, you know, it's the assumption that it's malicious unless proven otherwise, I guess if you can expand on that and tell me, I mean, what do you expect or what should somebody, you know, looking at Zero Trust for their architecture or framework, what to expect there?
Right. So in terms of what you can expect the way you used to look at security to change completely, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily expecting the uninspected, but definitely changing the way you approach security. That's where Zero Trust really comes into play here. And so the way we used to look at security, right, if we all need a refresher, is just based on network location or your on-premise network, right? Everyone came into the office, everyone badged in, everyone sat down at their desk and started the workday as is, right? There wasn't really an extension to any type of protection off of the network for mobile access, for example, or for cloud applications that have been deployed. And that just simply was because there wasn't a need at the time. But now we have to change that. We have to accept that our users are going to request access from anywhere and everywhere, multiple times of the day, and from multiple different sources. And there are different ways that you can deploy that. But one thing to keep in mind is that with Zero Trust, not only are we looking to verify the user when they first connect, but we're also looking to continuously verify trust throughout their entire connection process as well.
That's an interesting point because I don't think that's maybe highlighted as much with Zero Trust. I mean, we talked about, you know, verify Zero Trust, but you know, verify everything, but verifying it within multiple times, you know, within that same connection. That's interesting to highlight. Gauri, why is all of this important then? Why is Zero Trust such an important concept for businesses?
Boy, that's a great question. I think it's crucial. So we can no longer think about if a user is going to be compromised, but when. And I think John Chambers once said something like that in a speech he was giving. So if you shift your mindset to accepting that it's not so much about if, but when you're going to be breached, attacked, or compromised, then Zero Trust is a necessity. So the historical approach was the castle and moat approach, right? Think of it as an old school firewall, port open or port closed. In this scenario, you're either on the outside and you have no access, or you were granted access and you were let in to freely roam the castle. Now, that level of trust is pretty unrealistic in today's world. Instead, our environments demand a layered approach to cybersecurity. We aren't just trying to prevent as many attempts to get your crown jewels as possible. We're trying to mitigate the overall impact on your environment when it does inevitably happen. So we just have to accept that there's no way to 100% prevent attacks. However, we can and should do our due diligence to make sure that it isn't easy to get in and that they don't get far.
Right. And you're right. It's not if, it's when you get breached.
Yes.
Well, Lundy, why are we moving towards Zero Trust as an industry? I mean, we know the threats are numerous out there, but I wonder if you can just give us an overview of, I mean, why Zero Trust for the industry?
Yeah, no. And really, I think what really pushed this along is really with the pandemic, right? So obviously, we were seeing a slow shift of this even prior before then. But I think really with the pandemic, this really kind of spearheaded a lot of this a lot quicker, right? We spend a majority of our time working remote, right? So now we're no longer behind our security stack, or to what Gauri mentioned, you know, that protected moat.
Yeah.
Right. So now where people are actually working at are no longer at a physical branch location, right? They're working from home. They're working from, you know, maybe now Starbucks as things start opening up again. And it's really tedious to really kind of manage things like an always-on VPN. And also, like, with more applications moving over to the cloud, we really need to be able to access our data and our assets from wherever we are, but still also with the mindset of we're being protected, nothing's being leaked. And that's really where, you know, the zero trust concept really kind of comes in, is really kind of protecting that remote worker, but as well as also still protecting my branch locations. Remote working, you know, it still also has its own issues, right? Its own attack vectors, and therefore really kind of has its own solution, its own mindset. So it's a gradual move in the right direction, but it's still a phased approach, which can take years to complete, right? Which is why we're pushing people to start considering this now. Really should have started yesterday, right? So
Yeah. Well, creating a protected space, you know, it's not the castle and moat anymore. Like Gauri said, it's a matter of connecting every way, every time that, you know, our users are trying to access their information. So Kiana, can we talk about the public sector? You know, what specifically, how does this impact the public sector? And that would include the state government, local government, education. Those are large organizations that have a lot of people that, if I can put it delicately, you know, there's not always a focus on the security of it. It's the focus, it's, you know, the ease, the usability. I mean, you don't want a system where you have to go through so many hoops that it's, you know, users get frustrated. So I guess kind of looking at it from that other side. So specifically, how does zero trust impact the public sector?
Absolutely. And in a few ways we can go about approaching this particular question. I mean, just to kind of bring it back to what Lundy mentioned in terms of how we approach zero trust, there are different avenues that we can do that. And there's actually different approaches that are suggested depending on if it is state and local government versus education and the size of those different organizations as well, right? So one thing that I do want to mention here is that when we talk about zero trust, there are additional components, right? Because this is an architecture, we definitely have some additional kind of pillars here. I usually refer to them as the three W's, right? They'll be referred to other things depending on who you talk to. But these usually come down to the workforce, the workplace, and the workload, right? So the first thing is the workforce. Kind of going back to Lundy's example, when we talk about a remote worker, that's about protecting users no matter where they are. So if they're at a Starbucks, for example, or if they decide to work from home or they're working from a family's house or something like that, right? That's where we start to look at how we want to secure those users and the applications they're looking to access. Another W is also going to be the workload, right? So the workload is a bit more on the, you know, kind of on-premise side, where we start to talk about securing applications and some services that are provided through those applications inside of your network, right? And those are in another category. It's not usually something that you see started a lot when we talk about state, local government, and education, or just the public sector in general, honestly, right? But when we do see a whole lot of these start to kind of begin their process or their approach to zero trust, that's when we start looking at the workplace. And the workplace is exactly as it sounds, right? Securing users and devices that are on site at a location that you currently have deployed, right? So this could be just for workstations. So workstations that essentially can't be moved and have to stay on site. It could be for different types of network access devices as well. So understanding that there are different ways that you can approach zero trust, usually what I see from an education perspective, for example, is that we're usually looking towards possibly securing the workforce in this case. And the reason why it's more so along the workforce, I'll give you an example of what I've seen currently, right? Let's say that we have a student that has a school, university managed Chromebook, and they miss a day or two of school, right? Usually what you would think would happen is they're going to finish that workup by Monday, right? We're not expecting that student to come on site. We're not expecting them to come on site on a Saturday or Sunday and use that to access the resources to get their work done. We're expecting them to catch up at home, right? And so let's say over the course of that weekend that maybe they went to various different types of not safe for school sites or downloaded files or attachments that they shouldn't have. And then they come back to school and they try to associate to an SSID or plug in. That's really where Zero Trust can come into play, because there's so many places that Zero Trust could have helped to prevent that process from happening. One, with securing the workforce and actually being able to keep track of what exactly that user is doing, whether they're at Starbucks or at home, making sure they're not downloading anything they're not supposed to or that's not beneficial for the end user. And then we can also look at securing the workplace as well. And we get to the workplace part of that, that could essentially be when that user comes in and plugs in their laptop, doesn't have to be a Chromebook, just for the sake of example, or associates to an SSID, right? Being able to stop some of that lateral movement as well is going to be a very large portion of how we can start to, at the very least, right, have some type of authentic response to the threats that we see in our environment from a day-to-day basis. And I know I went on a bit of a tangent there, but there's so many different ways that this can impact public sector as a whole. There's so many ways it can impact education as well. We could probably sit here all day and talk about that.
No, I'm so glad that you mentioned a specific example in education. You mentioned that lateral movement. What do you mean by that?
So when we talk about lateral movement, that could essentially be conversations happening between peers, right? So let's say if we go back to that example of a user that's, let's say, plugging in a laptop, right? And we start to see that usually a whole lot of the overall malicious activity that happens on that particular endpoint is going to come down to how far it can propagate to, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the propagation, that's when we're looking into connections to other devices, how far they can get into those devices and the information they can grab from them as well, right? Every single device is going to have different types of crown jewels, to say, that can be accessed and unfortunately taken advantage of.
I would also just add on, right, that's not also just a public sector worry, right? This is really exactly any industry out there, right? Any business, any, even if you're not a business, it's a personal item, right? Because people, you know, you get people trying to steal, identity theft and stuff like that, right? So it's even taking in like how you can protect yourself overall, right? So
yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
The threats don't stop at just the office. So Lundy, what kind of products should we be looking at? I mean, we know that Zero Trust is not something you just buy off the shelf. Hey, I'd like a Zero Trust. What are the types of products that we should be looking at?
Yeah, so it's funny that you say that, because there's a security code that I was just looking at earlier. It's security isn't something that you buy, right? It's really something that you do.
Yeah.
We often say each organization, you're as strong as your weakest link, right? And really it's your end users, right? You know, it's what are they going to click on? And you can have the best security in the world, right? So as you mentioned, it's not really a solution that I could just say, hey, I'm going to pick this up off the shelf and we're going to have a Zero Trust, right? Yeah. As we really kind of been stating, it's really an architecture, right? So it's made up of a few different things. And this is where really the engineering answer of most items is it really depends, right? Because it depends on what does Zero Trust mean to that person, to that organization, right? What's also already in place, because, you know, money's not infinite, right? There's always budgets. People got to stay and kind of work within those confinements, right? And also where they like to start. Because as we mentioned, you know, there's the remote workers, there's the workforce, you know, as Kiana mentioned, you know, the three W's, right? Making sure, you know, where are they actually trying to focus on? So it really does depend on what is top of mind for them. You know, we've got some customers that will want to start with restricting port access, and others who want to start maybe utilizing their edge, or maybe others with endpoints, right? So really there is just to say that it's not one set solution. It's a couple solutions depending on what they're trying to protect here.
And Lindy, I have to say that I haven't heard that security quote before, and I love it. Security isn't something you buy, it's something you do. I think that's a great way to explain a concept that people have different interpretations of, and sometimes it's complex to understand because there's no one answer, right? Like you said, it depends and it's unique to each individual business or organization or network, right? However you want to think about it, even if it's, you know, thinking about different devices in an airport, there's so many examples. We take our phones with us everywhere. So that means the risk is constant. And this is something we should think about. But I often fear that, you know, in my passion for cybersecurity, I don't always explain this to clients or friends, family that are eager to learn very well. So I have to admit, Lundy, I'm going to steal that quote and say, you can't have a zero trust. It's something you do. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I definitely would say it's, you know, I feel for the security teams out there, right? Because you're trying to protect your network 100%. And, you know, those malicious actors just need to find that 0.0001% chance of being able to get through. And Kiana also mentioned, you know, that lateral movement, right? Because once they get in, it's almost like the keys to the kingdom, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the hard part comes in. And again, that's also where zero trust also really kind of helps plays out, because if we, you know, if they are able to get in, there's different roadblocks in every step of the way as they get into the organization, right? So it's definitely, it's not just protecting, you know, just the data, but as well as your users and your devices.
Right, right.
Absolutely. And that's usually when I start to have these conversations about zero trust, I'll usually go into explaining it, the fun W's, right? And then the next thing I usually say is just what zero trust means to you. You can gather so much from that, because you will get a different answer every time, right? So definitely good parts by Lundy and Gori on just, you know, how it changes. And it's a great thing that it varies so much. It means that there's space and for everybody to be able to protect themselves from, you know, malicious actors or whatever it is that they're looking to prevent from moving in their environment as well.
Right. Well, as we do start to wrap up our episode, we always ask our guests the same final question. And that's, where do you see technology going in the next year? Now, I know that's broad, of course, but it can be within this space or something that you're personally kind of tuned into. But where do you see us in 2023, you know, at the beginning of 2024? So, Gori, I'll start with you.
Yeah, Shelby, that's a wonderful question. And I don't want to admit, I promise we're cool, but this is the kind of thing we could like grab drinks over and chat about. It is something that we constantly think about, because you do have to be sort of ahead of the curve when it comes to cybersecurity. You do have to think of the creative things that hackers can do before they do them, and then try to mitigate and sort of get ahead of it. But Kiana, I see that you're super eager to respond, so I'm going to hand it off to you. You're the better storyteller.
Sure. So, I mean, in this case, right, I would just say cloud, and more cloud, right? And you may think, we already have plenty of cloud solutions out there already, right? At least from my perspective, you'll see there's still quite a few security solutions that are still being deployed on-prem or using virtualized infrastructure and whatnot. But just be ready to see that change as we sit those on top of even just public cloud providers. I think it's going to be a huge change, and especially for public sector, honestly, right? But we also have to think about how we're going to go about securing various different types of solutions, whether it's a cloud security product or whether it's just a cloud application you have deployed, right? We have to think a bit more towards the future. And I think the migration to cloud is going to be one of the largest ones on top of anyone's mind. And if you're not thinking cloud, right, you're definitely going to get left behind. So cloud, and more cloud is what I say.
And I wonder, I'm breaking protocol a little bit, but, you know, mentioning cloud within public sector, is it my imagination, or does it seem like there's a little bit of a hesitance within the public sector to really embrace, you know, this more cloud approach? I mean, maybe there's, you know, kind of those outdated ideas that, you know, we do need to protect the castle and the moat. And so, you know, moving all of our applications to the cloud is kind of, you know, asking for less control.
Oh, yeah. We are definitely asking for a lot, and it's perfectly understandable, right? I mean, you face a lot of various different types of scenarios where you may have something in place that's been a process that's worked for years, right?
Right. We've always done it that way.
Exactly. And we haven't reached that point where it doesn't work yet. So why would they change anything now? But then on the other side of the spectrum, you have to keep in mind, there are various different types of cloud applications out there, no matter what they are, that are just inherently insecure. I'll use that word for today. That's the word for today, insecure.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different vulnerabilities, ways that we can traverse and pull information from those databases that are hosted on the cloud, because that also expands your attack vectors that much larger as well. So definitely understand the hesitancy for that happening, but we do have to take that plunge eventually, especially in such an interconnected world that we're in now.
Right, right.
And I think the thing that we don't want to think about is, why do we have insurance in every other walk of life, right? Why do I have car insurance? Why do I have pet insurance? I know everyone doesn't have that. I have a needy large dog, but it's for when the bad things happen, right? So even if a company has cybersecurity insurance, while that is really helpful, it's almost like not getting an oil change when your car needs it and then relying on the insurance, knowing good and well that that's going to be way more money you spend long term. So it's like we're doing the little things and maybe patch fixing, but in the big picture, the amount of money, time, downtime, staff, you know, the list goes on, the things that you would have to give up and also the amount of money you would have to give to remediate can be a lot more devastating than having a plan in place itself. So I think this is one of those, I swear someone told me this isn't actually a Lou Holtz quote, but I'm going to go with what my dad said and say that it is, but that, you know, if you're failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. And unfortunately, that is how I feel about, you know, sort of moving to the cloud and that hesitation and not sort of starting to do that research now. But the positive is that there are a lot of people that can help guide that process and have conversations about approaching it in a way that it is sort of bit by bit, piece by piece, so it doesn't feel so overwhelming. So like Kiana and Lundy have said, it is unique to each person. And I think that plan will also be unique and individualized, so you're not doing it all at once and working towards that goal, which I do think, like Lundy said, we should have started doing yesterday.
Right. And Lundy, how about you? Where do you see technology going?
Yeah, well, and I just also to piggyback on kind of what everything's already been said, right, is, you know, there's a huge drive to also have less of a carbon footprint on networks, right? So this is kind of where cloud is really coming into play. And you know, with it's scary because you can't physically touch it. I can go and physically touch a firewall. I can go and physically touch a switch, right? And I think it's that unknown that makes people a little bit more hesitant to kind of move towards it. But it is something, you know, as also Gauri mentioned, you know, there are leaders out there, right? People are afraid to be the first ones out there in case because it's unknown, right? There may not be a whole lot of solutions out there that are going to, you know, based off of maybe what they're trying to do, may not be able to protect them or be able to do what they're trying to get access to, right? But it is a work in progress. And like I said, it's not something that's overnight or a box I can pick up off the shelf and just plug in. It's definitely something that's a work in progress, and it's working with people like Kiana and Gauri and myself to be able to kind of help guide and design and maybe just try to drive with where they're trying to go, right? There's a lot of security industries out there. So definitely it's big and scary, but it's, you know, as long as you have a plan in place, you know, you can definitely start making those right steps.
Right, right. Well, love all of the conversation. I think we could, Gauri, you're right. We could keep chatting and maybe over beverages, but thank you for all of the time and insight today. For listeners who maybe have any questions about anything that we talked about today, Gauri, how can they reach out?
Yeah, they can email me at gaurkhan@cisco.com. I'm also on Twitter, also on LinkedIn. Feel free to connect with us and we would be happy to help you through that process for yourself or answer any questions that you have. But again, that's gaurkhan@cisco.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. Shelby, thank you again for having us today. This was really a lot of fun and you're welcome to join us for beverages and discuss more of the future of technology anytime.
Fantastic. Well, thank you listeners for tuning in and subscribing to B2B Tech Talk with Ingram Micro. If you like this episode or have a question, please join the discussion on Twitter with the hashtag B2B Tech Talk. Until next time, I'm Shelby Skirhawk.
You've been listening to B2B Tech Talk by Ingram Micro. This episode was sponsored by Ingram Micro Xvantage. B2B Tech Talk is a joint production between Sweetfish Media and Ingram Micro. To listen to this episode and many others, visit ingrammicro.com.